Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
A very pleasant good afternoon. Wednesday, now heading downhill to the weekend. Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. You can find us at stevejonesshow.com and also subscribe to our free podcast. We're on iTunes, Apple Podcast app, Google Play. Search Steve Jones Show. Hit the subscribe button. By the way, if you do listen to us through Apple Podcast or iTunes, please leave us a review. Helps get the word out even further to Nittany Nation. As we're anticipating the final game in the Penn State Pitt series, Saturday noon, Beaver Stadium will be on beginning at 10:30 Saturday morning with the tailgate show here on WKOK. Lots of ways to get in contact with us, not only through our podcast, but also by email, stevejones@wkok.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle at SteveJonesPSU, and Steve will check in a moment from the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, North 4th Street, Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Legendary Penn State defensive star Tamba Hali is making an appearance in State College this afternoon at an area department store. And before he appeared there, Steve had a chance to get with him on the phone. So we'll have that chat with Tamba Hali coming up later on in the show. Joe Giuliano, Penn State football beat writer from the Philadelphia Inquirer, he'll be joining us at 3:35. We'll have Tamba on with Steve at 4:06. And also down the line, we've got Chris Mack checking in from Pittsburgh. Chris is one of the co-hosts on the morning show on Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan in Pittsburgh. Talk Pirates and Steelers with Chris. And also Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. Talk more Penn State football with Frank as we head toward the end of the weekend. Our high school football roundtable tomorrow. And, of course, Steve's brother, Kevin Jones. He'll be back with us on Friday afternoon with his weekly football pick. So we got Bob Buhner stopping by on Friday afternoon as well. So a lot going on as we roll through the rest of the week here on The Steve Jones Show. Antonio Brown took part in his first practice with the Patriots this afternoon, a day after a former trainer filed a civil lawsuit in Florida accusing him of sexually assaulting her on three different occasions. Brown, who has worn the number 84 throughout his career, wore number 1 today, his temporary number at practice. Bill Belichick declined to comment on additional questions about Brown before the practice, including his status for Sunday's game at Miami. In the lawsuit, Brown's former trainer, Brittany Taylor, accuses Brown of sexually assaulting her on three separate occasions in 2017 and 2018. Taylor is willing and planning to meet with the National Football League next week. She is getting married and can't meet before then. Brown has denied the allegations. His representation is lawyer Darren Heitner. And Drew Rosenhaus, Brown's agent, says he and his client were anticipating this possibility that a lawsuit will be filed, but he declined to say whether the Patriots knew of the looming lawsuit before signing Brown last Saturday. The lawsuit did catch the Patriots by surprise. The team will have to decide how to proceed with Brown. One possibility is Roger Goodell will place Brown on the commissioner's exempt list, and that would mean Brown would not be counted on the Patriots' active list while the league investigates the allegations. Batera Cordero, the girlfriend of Cleveland Browns defensive end Chris Smith, was killed earlier this morning in Cleveland. Smith pulled over after his vehicle, a 2019 Lamborghini, in which Cordero was a passenger, had a tire malfunction and hit the median. Cordero exited the vehicle and was standing on the road's shoulder when a car driven by a 47-year-old woman smashed into the passenger side of Smith's car. According to a Cleveland police report, Cordero was transported to a local hospital and pronounced dead. Police said the other driver admitted drinking. No charges, though, have been filed. Toxicology reports are pending. Smith was not injured or impaired. And the Kansas City Chiefs have already ruled out wide receiver Tyreek Hill out of Sunday's game against the Raiders, but they're holding hope he could return shortly after. Hill injured his collarbone and sternum in Sunday's win over the Jaguars. The procedure to reduce the sternovascular joint went well, according to a report. Hill stayed overnight at a hospital in Jacksonville. He returned Monday to Kansas City to begin his rehabilitation. And the Phillies are going to shoot for their second straight victory over the Braves tonight. Phillies winning a hard-fought 6-5 win last night against the Braves at Citizens Bank Park to remain in contention for that second National League wildcard berth. Home runs last night by Corey Dickerson. He homered twice, while JT Realmuto and Bryce Harper added a home run. Scott Kingery with an inside-the-park home run. And despite a huge list of injuries and a lot of inconsistency, the Phillies are 75-69. They are still alive. They are two games behind the Cubs for the last NL playoff position. Zach Eflin gets the ball tonight for the Phillies. He is 8-11 with a 4.31 ERA. Against the Braves this season, he is 0-2. Last Friday, Eflin gave up 6 hits and 2 runs in 5 innings on the bump and a 5-4 loss on the road against the Mets. That was the game Friday night where the Mets won with a walk-off walk. Phillies needing a strong performance tonight from Eflin to boost their playoff aspirations. And despite a rare loss, the Braves are still hot. They've won 10 out of their last 12. Dallas Keuchel beyond the mound tonight. He is 7-5 with a 3.47 ERA. In his last 5 starts, Keuchel has given up only 3 runs, going 4-0 with a 0.87 ERA. His last start was last Friday. Stellar in a 4-3 win over the Nationals, tossing 6 scoreless innings and allowing 6 hits. Against the Phillies this season, Keuchel is 0-1. With a 2.57 ERA. So I have that for you tonight. Braves at Phillies. And on deck will start at 6:30. First pitch at 7:05 with Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson.
Well, let's see what see if they can keep this going. And what are they, 2.5 back in the wild card?
I sent it to. I thought it was two games behind the Cubs. Yep. 75-69. Braves very, very impressive so far. Yeah, Braves keep this rolling. They could end up by the end of the regular season with the best record in the National League. They could surpass the Dodgers.
Yeah, I guess. As long as Ronald Acuña knows how to which base to throw to, they'll be fine. Yeah, inside the park home run.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got Joe Giuliano today, Tom Bahali today, Chris Mack today.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a lot.
We're cooking.
Going on. Yeah. So, that's what we have coming up. And, another newsworthy day for Antonio Brown. If you're in the league, you've got to be looking around saying, what the heck do we do with this?
Well, one thing's for sure. If they don't do anything, he's going to play. Let's see another way around that. But
he's practicing.
He's practicing, but, I mean, geez, they're 18.5-point favorites against the Dolphins. I would think a good plan for the Patriots would be just to not play A.B. this weekend, gives him more time to digest the playbook. It may be different if they're playing someone other than the Dolphins.
He cares. look, here's the bottom line for A.B., okay? He needs the money. Yeah, as I've said over and over again, he needs the money. He is desperate. I mean, he's not going to get money if he's not playing.
Well, he should have stayed in Oakland and kept the $30 million guaranteed. Now he's down to $9 million. That's a loss, in my opinion.
Of course it is. Same thing with Le'Veon Bell. I've heard Le'Veon Bell's courageous what he did. Courageous? He just took $14 million and burned it to the side of the road.
Gone.
Like, he'll never get it back.
No way.
Courageous. He's courageous.
Well, unless that rap, okay. Unless that musical rap career really takes off, he maybe could recoup some money.
One man's courage is another man's stupidity. Okay, way to go. Oh, my goodness.
I think Lev Bell finished with something like 60 yards rushing and a touchdown, I think, in his first game with the Jets. Give or take a yard.
He also caught some passes, too, right?
Yeah, a few here and there.
Yep. And of course, obviously, the Jets won big. Right? Jets won big? Huge? No? Are you saying they didn't win?
I could have sworn the Fighting Pagulas came out with the victory there.
You're saying that with Le'Veon Bell and Sam Darnold, they didn't win. Yeah. Well, it had to have been a shootout, 38-35, right? No?
Total points
tomorrow,
were under 40, wasn't it?
Yeah, no kidding. Tomorrow, Cam Meller, Pro Football Focus, Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. And our roundtable tomorrow, have we now determined in the roundtable?
No. No.
Why don't we just get the fan of the week on? They'd be more reliable.
I still say Kyle Alexander would fit that bill perfectly.
Sure.
Fan of the people. Whether it's Braves football or NASCAR, Eagles football.
NASCAR.
Kyle's a guy. Oh, yeah, he's followed racing for quite a while. The official public address announcer of Seals Grove Speedway, that one Kyle
Alexander.
Oh,
very nice.
Yes, he got that gig last year. This is his second year as the official
PA
announcer. Yeah, yeah. Goes down on the track, does post-race interviews with the winners. Yeah, doing a great bang-up job doing that. Actually, I shouldn't say bang-up. Mm-hmm. That's the last thing you want at the track. So.
NASCAR, it's another one that's not going well.
I guess Jimmy Johnson, I guess he's out of the playoff run. He's a popular driver. That doesn't help either.
Well, that doesn't help.
No.
You're
probably shocked that I knew that.
College game day, I believe, is going to Ames, Iowa?
Yeah, Iowa State. Look out. I couldn't tell you the last time they're... Maybe they've never been to Iowa State before.
They never have been.
Yeah.
Just look at the records over the years for Iowa State. That'll tell you they've never been there.
We'll have that game in our pick segment on Friday.
That game's a problem for Iowa. And I don't mean competitively. I mean, Iowa State, Campbell's done a great job. Matt Campbell's done a great job with Iowa State. But the game, I mean, I know they're going to bring game day there, but that's a problem for them. In other words, Iowa has no flexibility in its schedule to go out and play somebody else. Why don't you schedule a game with USC at home? Like, nope, can't do it. Got to play Iowa State. Well, why don't you play a game with LSU home? Like, nope, can't. Got to play Iowa State. Why don't you play a game? No, can't. Got to play Iowa State. And every year, when Iowa gets to a point where they make a run and have a really good season, why is it Iowa gets no traction nationally? Remember the year they tied Ohio State for the conference championship? I want to say it was 2009. And Iowa wasn't even considered by anybody to do anything, you know, to play in a national championship. I mean, nothing. Ohio State was. But not Iowa. Even though they didn't play each other in the conference that year. So they were tied for whatever year it was. It was a year they were tied for first. They were both 8-0 in the Big Ten. because non-conference wise, they were always stuck playing that game. With nine conference games now, they're locked into the Cy-Hawk thing forever. And it gives them no flexibility. I mean, like most schools, they have to play seven home games. But it's mandated they have to play it. That's great. I don't know. I understand it. I get it. Big rivalry. Got it. The whole deal. But you know what? We're in a different era now. We're in a different era. You're trying to do whatever you can to get to the college football playoff. And while Alabama can get away with playing some of the teams that they play, because, look, they still have to play LSU, they still have to play Auburn, they still have to play Texas A&M. I mean, Alabama's schedule is still really good. And they've got the name behind it, so they can play Louisiana Monroe. I don't know who they have. Who's the one the week they have this year? It is...
No, last year was the Citadel. I know that.
Citadel. I'm not sure who it is this year.
Yeah, we'll check.
But they can get away with that. I mean, because we're all credit is due. They still have to play Auburn. They still have to play Texas A&M. They still have to play LSU. I mean, they still have to play, just within their own division, a tough schedule. But a school like Iowa can't afford a loss.
Watch out. Alabama, November 23rd, will be taking on the Western Carolina Catamounts.
That's right. Let's see. Iowa can't afford it to do it unless they get, at least early on, some sort of non-conference game that vaults them into, hey, did you see what they did to Texas A&M? Wow. They can't even schedule the game. Because they have to have a couple of games at home, because everybody has that kind of budget. And because they had play Iowa State every year, that home and away slot's taken. They can't do a home and away with somebody, because with nine conference games, they can't do it. So while it's great for the state, and I understand that, nationally, it doesn't. I know game day will be there. It doesn't move the needle. Oh, that's nice. Iowa won. Oh, Iowa State won. All right. We're in a different era now. And you have to conform to what the era says you need. And I'd have to ask Gary Dolphin whether this is mandated by the legislature or not. It very well might be. Because, I mean, both schools get state money. So it might be mandated by the legislature that they have to play it. I don't know.
And if that's the case, it makes you wonder if it's like at a 2-year or 4-year clip, if they have to keep re-upping that.
It's longer than that.
Maybe 10? Wow.
I mean, it might be longer than that.
Wow.
I'll have to look it up. I'll see Gary in a few weeks. I'll ask him what the deal is with that series. Because, look, internally in the state, yeah, it's terrific. So I will not discount that in any way, shape, or form. All right. So that I understand. But if you want to play a national game, you know, if you're trying to play the national game, where you're trying to get yourself nationally to be a team that's trying to get to the college football playoff, does that game help you? All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hey, come closer. Word has it Sunbury Motors is preparing for their biggest truck sale ever. Pick from Central PA's largest selection of new Ford trucks with savings up to $16,350 during Sunbury Motors' massive September truck and SUV sale. Over 45 2019 Ford Escapes starting at just $18,180. Four-wheel drive 2019 Ford EcoSports are slashed to as low as $17,320. SMC has up to $8,000 off 2019 Ford Edges and up to a whopping $13,000 off Ford Expedition. locations, all clearly marked with these huge discounts. Maybe you'd better pull over and write this down. The hot, all-new 2019 Ford Ranger has discounts up to $6,500. And Sunbury Motors has 2019 Ford F-150 Crew Cabs, slashed to just $32,909. That's a lot of slashing. SMC is where you want to be right now for the largest truck and SUV sale in Sunbury Motors' 104-year history. Hurry while supplies last, but don't tell anyone.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We were talking about Iowa State earlier. That contract was extended through the 2025 season. So that means Iowa has to keep playing them through 2025, and any other intersectional game will have to take place in something called a bowl game. All right. With that, we bring in Joe Giuliano. Joe, welcome to the show. It's really great to have you with us.
Hey, thank you, Steve. It's good to be with you as well.
Yeah. Let's start with this. You know, I travel a lot around the state in the various roles I have to take care of during the course of the off season, and I'd like to know, in your area in Philadelphia, what is the interest in the Penn State Pitt rivalry, or is there another school that the fans in that area would prefer them play?
Well, you know, Steve, I think the biggest thing in Philadelphia is the devotion to all the professional teams, Flyers, Sixers, Phillies, and Eagles, especially Eagles. And, you know, it shows in the amount of space we devote in the paper to sports and in the amount of clicks we get online. So colleges, unfortunately, do take a back seat. Temple really has never been able to get a foothold with the fans except for the rabid alumni base, which... You know, for all the graduates the Temple's put out who live in Philadelphia, like myself, you know, 25,000-30,000 is their normal average attendance for a regular game. I mean, the year they played Notre Dame, obviously they sold out the Link, and of course when Penn State came in 2015, it was you know, quite a big deal as well. Yeah. But I get the feeling that Penn State fans here love the Ohio State game. Obviously, the significance of that, with you know, as it impacts the Big Ten East and whether you get into the Big Ten championship game, and of course, it worked for Penn State in 2016. I get the feeling Ohio State is a bigger rival than Pitt. Although I think there are old timers like me, and I wouldn't quite say you, who really like to you know, like that Penn State Pitt rivalry. It's been something they grew up watching with Joe Paterno and then with Johnny Majors and Jackie Sherrill and people like that. So, yeah, I think Ohio State has an edge over Pitt, but I don't think it's that big of a, you know, like a big. It's not like much more support for one than the other.
Yeah, my first Penn State Pitt game was 1976. So I do go back a long way in this thing.
Actually, that was I got to do the home games for UPI. The first one, I guess, was 77 because the 76 game was at Three Rivers, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep, so I did the I did every home game from that till 84, and I did the 81 game in Pittsburgh where Penn State came back from 14-0 down against Dan Marino to win 48-14.
So through two games of watching this team, and you know, everybody's still trying to get a gauge on everything, what are at least some general impressions, pro and con, that you've seen so far?
Well, let's see. I think pro, I mean, I really like the way the front seven is playing. The defensive line has some really good athletes there, and the depth that Sean Spencer has been able to build has been really admirable over the years. And this year, I think it's obvious. I think it might be his deepest defensive line group yet. I really like the linebacking core they have, and the guys who are backing up, like Ellis Brooks and Jesse Laketta. I mean, these kids are going to be you know, when they finally break into the starting lineup after Jan Johnson and Cam Brown depart, I think they're going to be like super players, you know, all Big Ten caliber players. Offensively, you know, I really you know, Sean Clifford has shown well in his first two games, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. K.J. Hamler can break a game open at any second. So, you know, I think that's positive from that standpoint. But I don't know. I don't want to disparage Idaho, but, I mean, they came here, they did their best, but it was almost like it wasn't even a game. And I think the fact that, you know, Penn State really had a chance to at least stretch out 72 guys, you know, to play and get them on film was a positive. But I think going into the Pitt game, you know, we really don't quite know what they're capable of doing. The fact that they were so inconsistent against Buffalo, I think, is a cause for concern. Although, if you score 45 points, 38 by your offense, and it's you only have the ball for 17 and a half minutes, I'm sure that's something that you can take to the bank as the season goes on, as you get your offense more consistent. But I think there's just a lot of questions as we go into Pitt, and then the Big Ten schedule is going to be a real it's going to be really tough. I mean, when I looked at the schedule at the start of the season, I thought Maryland was a gimme, and that isn't the case anymore.
No. In fact, what, they have Temple this week, right?
Yes, they do at the link, yes, on Saturday at noon.
Saturday at noon. All right. So now you mentioned Sean Clifford in that answer. He admitted to us in the postgame show, that Jack Hamm and me, he says, look, first two series against Idaho, he says, there were nerves. Since the last 7 quarters that you've watched him play, what do you think about him as a quarterback?
Well, I like the fire. I like the leadership capabilities. I mean, he's a third-year player, but only a second year of actual competing, and he's already a captain. The fact that he basically took the offense by the nape of the neck when Tommy Stevens left and said, hey, we're going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. Don't worry about it. And I really admired that in him. As far as, you know, his actual football prowess, I mean, he looks like he has a really strong arm, a kid that really, you know, can zip a pass in a tight window or throw it deep. I mean, he's feathered some nice passes out there for long touchdowns, as we've seen in the first 2 weeks. The running part of it, I think he's still getting used to. I mean, he did it in high school. He told us yesterday, he said, hey, you know, it's not like I'm new to this RPO thing. I used to do it in high school, but he does admit the speed of the game is a lot faster, and he's got to make better and quicker decisions. So I think once he can get that figured out, I think he's going to be really good. You know, obviously the jury's still out if he's going to be another McSorley, but I think he's got those capabilities. I think he just needs a little experience and time to you know, refine some things, and you know, maybe he'll get there.
It's interesting that so far the 3 takeaways on defense have one common thread. They've all been made by seniors.
Yes.
John Reed has 2. Cam Brown forced the fumble, recovered the fumble. Seniors are in short supply in general in college football because, like, that's the way the rules are these days, and people do want to make money. In your opinion, Joe, has that affected the level of play at all, or is the caliber of athlete so high now in college football because of the training and everything that it's not as noticeable?
Yeah. No, I really think the caliber of play is high, Steve. I really do. You know, look at the roster that Penn State ended last season with. You know, 14 or 15 of those guys took off for other programs, and most of them were grad transfers. The fact that the younger kids came in and, you know, basically took their jobs or took their backup jobs was pretty telling, I thought. You know, and these were some good players who left. But the guys that came up, you know, really apparently in high school really developed their game to a level as high as you can get in high school, and, you know, whether they were 4-star or 5-star or even high 3-stars,
right,
you know, coming in and taking over backup roles and some even getting into the starting lineup. So I think the caliber of athlete today is, you know, a young athlete is better than it has been. And I think that you're right, seniors are in short supply, but they sure do provide some good leadership. You mentioned John Reed, our local kid from St. Joe Prep, and Cam Brown, and then you got Garrett Taylor, you know, another great leader, Robert Windsor on that side of the ball, so, and Jan Johnson, can't leave him out.
No.
You know, they have some really good leaders, but these young kids are really going to be something as they keep getting older and maybe heading to the NFL maybe a year earlier than Penn State fans want them to.
Right. And in fact, when I talked to fans about that in the offseason, they would ask me about the transfers. I said, well, the problem is Penn State out-recruited them. Right? And that, yes. and that's what happened along the way. And it's not the kids' fault. I mean, it just happened.
Oh, no. Yep.
Not at least. What do you think of the running game so far, Joe?
Well, I was really enthusiastic about it after week one, not so much after week two. I think that Buffalo maybe loaded up a little bit against the run, which was, I guess to be expected the way they ended up in the first week running the ball all over Idaho. But, I worry about like a guy like Ricky Slade. He's got 17 yards and 8 carries in 2 games, and I know there really hasn't been much of a chance for him. You didn't want to play your starters too long against Idaho, and you wanted to give everybody an equal amount of time, even Nick Ury. And then against Buffalo, there just wasn't enough time with the ball for Penn State. By the time they were finally getting the ball off of Buffalo, they were going to the air mostly, more than running. I mean, the running backs only carried 11 times in the whole game, so I think that's a cause for concern. But we'll see how it happens now. With as the competition gets tougher, maybe they'll, maybe they'll just be a little better as far as execution wise, getting everybody on the same page and, running the ball as well as they did against Idaho.
What are some of the important elements in this game that you'll be watching for as it plays out Saturday, Joe?
Well, I think the Pitt defense, is playing pretty well. I've noticed their stats are in the top 25 in rushing defense and total defense, and I think 39th in pass defense. And their secondary is known to play, kind of an aggressive style that might make it tough for, Penn State's young players who maybe haven't seen, press coverage like that before. So I think that's the one thing the primary thing that I'm really going to look at is if they have something like that, if Pitt can, slow down their offense or maybe stop explosive plays. I really think the key for Penn State is, we all saw it Saturday night, just being more consistent. They really need to sustain some drives. Coach Franklin said yesterday, he says, time of possession was always something that people pointed at, but now modern analytics show that it's explosive plays and preventing explosive plays and turnover margin. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm an old guy. I think time of possession still is pretty important. And if you don't have the ball, you can't score. And if you wear your defense down, the other guys are going to score. So that's pretty elementary in my book. But, I think for Penn State to have success in this game, I think they're going to have to show some sustainable offense. Yeah, sure. You can hit some quick, explosive plays, 50 yards passes to Hamler or Dotson, but I think they really have to control the ball, keep it away from Pitt, and just, maybe grind it out a little more than they did against Buffalo.
Joe, always a pleasure. Great respect for your work, as always. We really appreciate the time you gave us today.
Thank you, Steve. Great respect for your work as well. Take care. We'll see you Saturday.
You bet. Joe Giuliano, Philadelphia Inquirer, one of the best in the business, without question. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Great to have you with us on the show today. Thanks to Joe Giuliano for being on the show. Tom Bahali in the next half hour. Chris Mack in the final half hour. And Patriots are sitting there saying, okay, we signed who? We did what? He's charged with what? He's sued for what? Wow. You just can't. There are just some people who are just worth more trouble. Antonio Brown's a really talented player. He's really talented. There's no getting around it. I'll give you an example. I think I gave it kind of the short shift yesterday, but I'll expand upon it here. Let's take Odell Beckham Jr. Odell Beckham Jr. is capable of making the spectacular catch. We've seen it. But here's where Odell Beckham Jr. is just not worth the time or energy. for every spectacular play he makes, you also have to make seven or eight ordinary plays. Odell Beckham Jr. is incapable, at least so far in his career, of taking the ordinary play and turning it into spectacular. Antonio Brown makes spectacular plays, but Antonio Brown, to his credit, can take an ordinary play and turn it into a spectacular play. That's the difference between the two. You know, one guy's out there wearing a $190,000 watch. Okay, he's not causing any legal trouble off the field, but he's not worth the money. Now, if you had a guy that was on the straight and narrow with everything he's doing out there and is a team player and plays like Antonio Brown does, wow, you've got a gem. He makes spectacular plays, and he takes the ordinary and is capable and has shown he can take ordinary and turn it into spectacular. Beckham doesn't do that. Antonio Brown can and does. But what price do you pay as an organization? And sometimes there's just some people, it's just not worth it. Sometimes it's just not worth it. I mean, you are bedazzled by the talent. But you have to ask yourself, is it going to be worth it? For every great play that he makes, does he then cause some problem away from the field that makes you sit back and go, oh, I just don't want to deal with this. I'm sick of dealing with it. He's accused of what? He Instagrammed what? He said what? Is that the kind of existence you want in management? I don't know. Then if it's the Pirates, it's even worse. Your team's not very good, and the guy that's not very good causes you problems. Kyle Crick. Who knows what Ian Vasquez got into last night? But the second time this year, Crick's been all bent out of shape about Vasquez. I mean, the bullpen coach for the Pirates, I've never met him. But I've been told this guy is about as nice a guy as there is on the planet. And he got suspended for two games because Crick was whining, moaning, and complaining about the fact that we're out here doing all this work, blah, 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 and Vasquez isn't, blah, 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 blah. And essentially, the bullpen coach told him, he said, look, mind your own business. Well, that then set things off, and the bullpen coach ended up getting suspended for two games, and Crick didn't. But Crick should mind his own business because during the All-Star break, Crick has to make all these various plans during his All-Star break. Right, Vasquez has to plan to go to the All-Star game. So maybe Crick ought to be working harder on his craft to get himself to the All-Star game instead of whining, moaning, and complaining about somebody who already does take care of business and actually participates in the game. I mean, he's out for the rest of the season, obviously, with the finger injured in the fight last night or the incident or whatever you want to call it. The Pirates should suspend him and they should release him. Simple as that. Hey, you're not releasing a potential all-star. Just release him. And the reason you ought to release him is quite simple. You know what? You're not good enough to help us win games anyway, and we're not going to have you cause a problem in the clubhouse. Okay. You're not worth the trouble. That message is loud and clear to everybody in that club. You're not worth the trouble. You're not good enough. So don't cause trouble. You aren't that good. Tom Bahali next half hour.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.